You are listening to Talking About Organizations, a podcast about management and organization studies. This is an excerpt of episode 58, the live recording from the second edition of our professional development workshop on classics of organization and management theory. This was held at the 79th annual meeting of the Academy of Management in August 2019. This podcast features the third and final speaker, Gino Catani, from the New York University Stern School of Business. He presented the work of James D. Thompson, in particular his book, Organizations in Action. Let's listen.
Okay, let me start by thanking Greta and Pedro for the invitation. I was invited even last year, but I had to cancel at the very last minute. So it's very nice to be here, and I'm glad to present my thoughts on Organizations in Action by James Thompson. It was nice to reread this masterpiece or classic book in organizational theory for the 10th time, I guess. But it's actually quite an interesting experience to go back to this book because it's really a source of inspiration. I mean, there are obviously limitations. I mean, there are things that we don't necessarily find convincing nowadays. But I mean, if you go back and you reread some of the parts of this book, I mean, it's truly inspirational. Let me go through some of the key ideas of Thompson, and then I want to try to convince you that this book really anticipates some of the debates, or some of the themes that we are even nowadays doing research on. By the way, this, James Thompson was a key figure in the 60s. He was not only the author of this interesting book, but also the founder of ASQ and the first editor of ASQ. Unfortunately, like John Woodward, died prematurely of cancer at age 50, 51. The book is a classic book. I mean, the impact has been, I mean, it's still enduring. I mean, if you look at Google Scholar, every single day you have more citations. That number is not the current number. This morning was greater than that. And it's truly a generative book. It has 95 propositions. And if you read them, some of them are truly hypotheses that you could test. So it's truly inspirational at multiple levels. The theoretical foundation, I mean, and I kind of agree with framing his work in within the context of contingency theory, but I think one of the strengths of this book is to span boundaries. It would be really limiting if we wouldn't make justice to his contribution to treat this book as an exemplar of contingency theory. If you go back at the theoretical foundation, clearly it builds upon contingency theory and actually develops contingency arguments, but this book is borrows heavily from Simon's notion of bounded rationality. It borrows heavily from the behavioral theory of the firm. It borrows heavily from Emerson's classic paper, 62 paper on power and dependence. And those concepts are integrated very nicely to talk about how firms behave and respond to contingencies and trying to deal with constraints from the environment. Truly a multidisciplinary book, and I think for people that are interested in categories, you probably see in this book a good example of how spanning boundaries, spanning categorical boundaries, actually pays off. It's not stigmatized. Okay. I think that the key question, a very simple question, in many ways a deceptively simple question that Thompson tries to address in this book is, we know that organizations act, but what determines how and when they will act? He has a very interesting structure in his book. The first part of the book is purely devoted to what he calls impersonal forces, which essentially affect the way organizations behave. And he explicitly says, I want to put aside personality in this part of the book, because that would create all kinds of theoretical challenges. And essentially, this is probably the most, as you say, the part of the book that is more consistent with a contingency approach. You can argue that at the end of the day, most of his propositions that crystallize his theoretical insight are trying to show how organizations that face very similar environmental conditions behave very similarly. Although by making this statement, I would probably trivialize a little bit his contribution, because if you read this part of the book carefully and you look at some of the propositions, you will see the variety of strategies that organizations can deploy in order to shape the environment. And after reading the second part, you will actually appreciate the implicit recognition that firms, organizations facing the same environmental conditions might actually come up with different ways, different strategies, in other words, to deal with the environment. So it's not necessarily true that you observe organizations responding or adopting similar strategies to deal with the environment, even when they face the same conditions. There is still a possibility for heterogeneity in the way they act. So the second part of the book is indeed laying out the foundations for what essentially is administrative discretion. And this is not just at the level of top management. Actually, he actually has a very holistic notion of administration that goes from what he calls the institutional level, which would be the top management, to the intermediate management, what he calls the organizational level, and then the technical level, basically people, if you wish, on the shop floor. Okay, those were essentially running the operations of the organization. And implicit, there is a strong emphasis on the role of the middle management as a translator between the two levels, between the operational, the technical, and the institutional or top management. The important point here is that the emphasis that Thompson places on the role of discretion in many ways allows for heterogeneity in organizational behavior, even when they face very similar conditions. Okay, so that is in a way consistent but inconsistent with the contingency argument and kind of paves the way for, I believe, interesting developments that in organizational theory, also I would say in strategy. Okay, nowadays we talk a lot about shaping the environment and each creation, enactment or effectuation. I think that it doesn't fully develop some of these insight, but the seeds of some of these ideas are clearly evident in some of these arguments, at least at the theoretical level, okay, and in some of these propositions. Let me skip a little bit the core argument. I assume that most of you are familiar with his work. If you're not, it's your problem, which means that it's a good opportunity for you to read carefully the book. But essentially, trying to understand how firms cope with the uncertainties from the environment and the kind of technologies that they use. And the central, one of the key conceptual contribution in his work is this idea of task environment. The task environment, if you wish, is a subset of the larger environment, which is the most relevant environment for the organization, from which essentially the organization gets inputs and to which the organization brings whatever outputs the organization creates. The important thing here in the task environment is the complexity of the task environment. It's not just customers, it's not just suppliers, it's also other competitors. It's also, if you want to use the institutional language, is the institutional environment. Okay, and essentially the organization's survival, long-term survival, depends on its ability to really engage, let's say, in a conversation with each one of these different actors. And it's not just fortified forces, although there are some elements of that, it's mostly an institutional, broader institutional understanding of what the environment looks like. And you can see how by focusing on some of these actors, many important subsequent discussions have been already kind of previewed in his paper, in his book, sorry. I wanna just share with you a few themes that in my opinion are kind of sort of anticipated more or less clearly in his book. One is the idea that the boundaries between the organizations and the task environment are not given, are not fixed. Are not exogenous, it's actually a decision variable. Essentially, the organization is always trying to redefine these boundaries, and the boundary redefinition is essentially an attempt of the organization to reduce its dependence on the environment. If you look at the citations, he never cite Coase, although the 37 paper by Coase was there, but, and if you go back to Coase, even before he start talking about explicitly about transaction cost, there are similar arguments about boundaries, organizational boundaries. Even for Coase, organizational boundaries are a decision variable. The other important thing that is a direct derivation of his notion of task environment is that he's really thinking about organizations dealing with multiple stakeholders. I mean, nowadays we talk a lot about non-market strategy, about stakeholders' view, but I mean, essentially, Thompson's book is how you deal with multiple stakeholders, not just one single type of stakeholder. And that, by the way, it's not by chance that if you go back to resource dependence theory, one of the key foundational contributions is Thompson's book, okay? The other important theme that he sorts of anticipates is the notion of adapting versus shaping. In Thompson's conceptualization, organizations are not simply adapting to the environment or trying to react to contingencies or constraints. This is probably the one version of the contingency view, is really thinking about how can I manipulate some of the strategic variables that I can control. All of his book is about how can I shape, to some extent, the environment, not simply be shaped by the environment, okay? And the other important thing is, which is actually very clear in the second part of his book, is the recognition of the role of human agency. The idea of discretion is clearly consistent with the recognition that individuals, the decision makers in the organizations, are critical to understand how firms decide to deal with constraints and essentially overcome contingencies. He actually explicitly acknowledged the importance of human perceptions and how that eventually affects the kind of response or the kind of strategy that organizations adopt, even when they face similar conditions. So in a way that allows for heterogeneity in organizational behavior. By the way, this is another interesting passage from the second part of his book where he really talks about administration can innovate. So essentially decision makers at different levels can try to leverage or at least act upon strategic variables to shape the environment. It's not simply being shaped by the environment. I'm not arguing that Thompson is promoting or advocating a constructivist approach. There is no notion of enactment, okay? It's still, to a large extent, a positivist, okay? There is a reality out there, but I can try to shape it, okay? I'm not enacting that reality. There are obviously books like papers that are popular best sellers, but here today, but forgotten tomorrow. And I think there are, on the contrary, books or papers, books in this case, that are classics or best sellers in the long run. Obviously, only classic papers or classic books like Thompson books achieve consecration at the end. Everybody prays classic, but only a few really read them. So I think that, unfortunately, what happens sometimes with this book is a lot of people cite them or don't even cite them, but they don't read them. And that is really a pity. So it's great that this episode is actually resurrecting some of these fantastic books. Thanks so much. Thank you.